Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of really three now morning show hosts, and it's a lovely Tuesday morning here in Sandpoint on the 21st of January. I'm going to start with a weather report, and I think that'll be pertinent today because we are going to be talking about things related to weather and snow, etc. My guest is I'm just going to introduce you right now, Jeff Thompson, and you are from a couple of places that I've learned more about, but for this morning, you are from Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, your ski patrol at Schweitzer, and you have a lot to do with the Schweitzer Avalanche Dog Rescue Program. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, and you're right. I do have too many jobs sometimes, it feels like.
And another one at the Kinnexu,
KLT, Kinnexu Land Trust.
So you're a busy guy this winter. Well, we'll be back to you in just a moment because first we'll do some weather and then we were going to be talking about Avalanche Center and Avi Dogs. All right, folks, this morning, it's not bad. It's a little warmer than I expected. It's saying Sandpoint is now 21 degrees, which isn't bad. We're looking for a somewhat mostly sunny day today, which is fun, high of 30. Kind of more of the same throughout the week, lows in the teens and low 20s, highs in the high 20s and low 30s, and a mix of some sun and some clouds, and I don't see an awful lot of chance of snow. Maybe 10% on Thursday, 30% Thursday night, Friday, a percentage. And that's important because we are talking about snow and what's going on with snow and avalanches and how that affects everybody. All right. Having gotten through a good weather report with kind of same every day, but not bad for town, let's move on and talk about some really cool and interesting stuff with you, Jeff. Well, first of all, thank you for coming in. I know you've got work to do, a lot of work to do with all those jobs, and I just appreciate you, your willingness to come in and talk.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks, Julie.
You bet. So why don't we start, and you've done this before, you've been on before, but do tell us just a bit about you, how you came to be here in Sandpoint, and how you got involved with the Avalanche Center, Ski Patrol, and the Rescue Dog Program.
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in South Philadelphia, so I grew up in the city, you know, but somehow developed a love for skiing and skied on a 200 vertical hill in the Poconos for years and years. And just, I knew that skiing was going to be part of my life. And so I ended up moving to Colorado and went to school at Colorado Mountain College and just sort of found myself in the avalanche world. I remember in college that I knew that some of the avalanche classes were easy electives, and so that I was like, "Well, I'll take those," you know. And next thing I know, I'm doing this avalanche thing, and got plugged in with Ski Patrol, and I realized that there was a need for dogs at the ski area I worked at in Colorado, and it was sort of one thing led to another, and you know, in my formative years, just sort of fell into it, and then next thing I knew, I was sort of the person doing it, and I fell in love with it, and I've been doing it for about 30 years now. And so I was in Colorado until 2015, and then I moved up here to Sandpoint to work for Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center as the director of the Avalanche Center.
Okay, and you weren't a ski patrol yet, but so you came for the first that job and then became a ski patrol.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Arlene Cook, who's a director up there, and I said, hey, you know, I'm a ski patroller at heart. You know, this is what I love to do. And so we were able to work it out so that I could do both jobs. And sometimes that feels like a lot, but I'm so passionate about it that it seemed like the right thing.
It sounds actually like a dream job for you. You're doing everything you like and busy and really helping a lot of folks too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very great. Cool. All right. Well, let's jump into the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. Now, we recently interviewed, would it be your boss or one of your coworkers, your newest person there?
Yes. But, Chris Bilbrey. So the Idaho Panhandle National Forest hired a director. And so Chris Bilbrey fills that role. And he was on earlier this year to talk kind of about, you know, his role and where he came from and how he's going to plug into the program. So it's great to see, you know, the Avalanche Center growing, and you know, it's been amazing over the last 10 years to see where we've come from to where we are now.
Yeah, that you can have someone in that role and really have, you know, a growing organization. I love to hear that. Our focus today is a little bit different from that one. So we're going to talk a bit more about the nuts and bolts of what goes on at the Avalanche Center. So let's start with just a brief history. How long? I think we might have interviewed right after you came here to start working. I'm thinking that was one of our first interviews, Phil and me. So let's start with a short history and then get into more nuts and bolts.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, the Avalanche Center, I mean, it actually started in, gosh, the late 80s, you know, early 90s. And it was as simple as, you know, call in on a landline and you get the Avalanche report that they recorded. And there wasn't much to it, but it really started back then. And then we've continued to grow it. And now it's, you know, social media and computers and our forecasting operation. I mean, our connection with the community has grown amazingly. We're really, what the Avalanche Center is all about is connecting the danger that you may find when you're out there to the community. You know, our biggest mission is just trying to relay that message of, when you go into the backcountry, here's what you need to look for. And here's what, you know, is going to get you in trouble today. And here's how to avoid it, which is probably the biggest part of that message.
Right. And is it different for different types of users? Because I know we've got snowmobilers and whatever, snowshoers, skiers, all kinds of different uses.
Absolutely. And when you look at the big picture, there's many ways to get yourself in trouble with avalanches. You know, there was an incident last year locally where someone went out their front door and closed it too hard and the roof slid and buried them in an avalanche. And then there's been times where you're driving down the highway and you don't even realize you're in avalanche terrain. And an avalanche may come off of a road bank or from a slope above you. And so there's times it's not just the snowmobilers and the skiers. You know, avalanches can hide in these funny places.
That's right. And I think even Amtrak has problems with avalanches from time to time.
Absolutely. Good point. Yeah.
So lots of ways that avalanches can affect us. Well, tell us a little bit about the information you provide and how it goes out, and who are the people who are most likely to want to access that info?
Well, I'll start with the people that are most likely to access it. And around here, we have a huge snowmobile community. You know, we forecast mostly for the Bitterroot Mountains in the Silver Valley, the Selkirks, which are kind of on the other side of the lake, or the Cabinets, which are on the other side of the lake, and then the Selkirk Crest, all the way up to the Canadian border. And we have snowmobilers and skiers, so mostly recreationalists that are accessing the terrain and who are going to be using our information the most. And so what we do as an Avalanche Center is we have forecasters, such as myself, and we go out into the backcountry, you know, 3-4 times a week, and we dig into the snow and we look at all the layers, and then we take into consideration the weather, you know, just like you just read, we look at the weather and how that weather is impacting the snow that's out there. And it's constantly changing, and it can go from a high danger to a low danger quick, and then back to a high danger quick. And so it's hard to dig in the snow and see exactly what you're looking at. So we try to save recreationalists that step, where we can tell them, hey, we've had a lot of wind, so you might want to avoid these types of slopes. Or we've had 60 inches of snow recently, so you may want to avoid really steep slopes today. Or, you know, there's so many different scenarios. And so that's our job. And the way that we relay that information is primarily through our website, which is idahopanhandleavalanche.org. And you can just click on the daily forecast. Or if you become a member, you can have it emailed to you. And then you can just open it up in your email.
That's great.
Yeah. And if you're into social media, we're always posting videos and showing you how dangerous the snow is and taking cool pictures. And, you know, so there's lots of ways.
Yeah. How many of you are out testing?
Let's see. Our crew is about 10 people. We have 4 forecasters, and then we have a bunch of technicians that come with us and help us out.
Okay. And are they volunteers, paid? How does that work?
Mostly all paid staff. All the forecasters and folks going into the field are paid staff. But to support the program, we do have a friends group, you know, the Friends of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. And that is a volunteer-based nonprofit. And, you know, it's a working board, and they all, I mean, we couldn't do it without our friends group. And so that's the volunteers. They're the they're the, even though we're kind of on the front lines delivering the message, we couldn't do it without our friends group.
I would guess. I mean, think of all the areas, three different mountain ranges that you're trying to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And, yeah. And you know, a lot of times those mountain ranges are looking different. It might rain down south and snow up north. And so sometimes it's a head scratcher on how you relay that message of what the danger is.
Yeah, I just can't believe it. I mean, it's such a service, and that we can now go online. When it used to be a phone call, you'd listen to that same report, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, this can be updated and changed. It just sounds like a huge improvement over the years. And are there results that show that people are safer? I imagine that's balanced, because more people are out there, but more people have more information. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, good point. And I think all of those are true, that it is hard to quantify how much work we're actually doing, because, you know, you can't say, well, would that person have been caught in an avalanche without your info or not? It's hard to say. But we do know that many more people are using the backcountry than they used to. We also know that ski equipment and snowmobile equipment is way more capable than it used to be. People are able to take their equipment way higher into the mountains and on steeper slopes than they used to, and access places of more concern. You know, and you know, the Idaho Panhandle, unfortunately, we have had some accidents in the last couple of years that have really kind of told us how important this information can be. And you know, so that all leads us to believe that what we're doing is saving lives. It is helping make decisions. Avalanches are a hard one. It's almost like lightning. You don't realize how bad of a situation you may be in until all of a sudden you see that fracture, and then you look around and you think, oh man, this is not good.
This is bad. Yeah. Right, this is a bad situation.
Yeah. So yeah. The more we can relay that to our public and get that message across, the better. But at the same time, it's a balance. You know, we all go out there because we love it. You know, we want to ski, we want a snowmobile. And so we want to, you know, just make sure that people have the information to do it safely.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this has been why people have moved to Schweitzer for many, many years. And your information has to make it safer. There are more people, but they have access to more information so they can be safe. And so I got to think it's a great positive. Yeah. Yes, we do have accidents, and try to minimize those. I suppose we should talk a bit about things that folks can bring into the backcountry so that they're the safest they can be. That's changed quite a bit over the years.
It sure has. From an avalanche standpoint, it starts off with a beacon, shovel, and a probe. And a beacon is that transmitter that you wear on your body that if something were to happen, you're able to look for people in your own party. You know, if somebody's buried in an avalanche, time is of the essence. And so if you can get out a transceiver or beacon and find that person quickly, that's the best chance at survival. And so those three things, an avalanche beacon, a shovel, and a probe, is what we recommend number one. And then going along with that on that same line is knowledge of how to use it and knowledge of how to avoid avalanches.
And you all train on that.
We absolutely do. You know, we train, but we also, as part of the Avalanche Center, education is a huge part of what we do. And so we have many different classes. We have all day rescue classes, but then we also have level one classes. We have kids 101 classes. We have all sorts of classes. And if you get on that same website, idahopanhandleavalanche.org, you can find access to all those.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody who wouldn't benefit from one of those classes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's amazing. Here. I mean, and they're so much fun. I mean, they're not just fun to teach, but I mean, it's just such a great group of people. They're all there for the same reason. You get to go skiing or snowmobiling, depending on the class, with each other. I mean, a lot of times you meet partners that you end up recreating with for years. That's one of my favorite parts of the job, is you come across people. You're like, oh, hey, remember me? I took that class a couple years ago. And they're with somebody from that class that they went through. It's such a neat thing.
That's very cool. And it's very important, I think, at least I believe this, not to run out there alone, right? Buddy system is very important when one is out, far, far out.
Absolutely. You know, that we very much recommend, especially in the winter, traveling with a partner. And, you know, if you do decide to go by yourself, it's understanding those consequences, like understanding the risk that you're taking and the place that you're putting yourself. You know, yeah. People do it. I would recommend, you know, you really scale back the exposure and probably don't go too far into the woods and have a good communication plan. And but we definitely recommend, and we always go out with a partner.
Yeah, good idea. Very important idea. Now, what about these blow up avalanche? I don't know what the word is, but these things that will let you float up on top. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, the avalanche airbags. Yeah, that's something that's gaining popularity. And the idea there is that you have basically a big balloon that gets blown up out of your backpack. And, you know, I've heard it described as the mixed nut theory, where if you take a bowl of mixed nuts and you shake it and shake it and shake it, it's all those nuts that nobody wants that come to the surface. You know, the big walnuts and the big, you know, all those big nuts, they come to the top. And so that's sort of the idea, is that if you're in an avalanche, you pull that thing and it makes you bigger.
Yeah.
And it helps float you to the surface. It keeps you on the surface instead of being pulled down by your skis and snowboard, and it allows you to stay on the surface. And in the right situations, it does work. You know, I always wear an airbag, and I've deployed my airbag before in situations. Not all avalanches is it going to work, but it definitely works in some.
At least you've got another little edge that can help if something happens. Yes.
Yeah. And I like that feeling to know that if something were to happen, at least I have this trigger I can pull. And I mean, not only does it help float you to the top, but it's big and bright and orange, and it sort of gives a visual, you know, if you do get buried, maybe part of that bag is sticking out and your partners will be able to see it and find you
a little sooner, which is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, let's see. What have we not talked about that is important? I don't know. Do you have any little stories you'd like to share about somebody who really benefited from this great service that you offer?
Well, I guess, I mean, the thing that comes to mind when you say that is our Abramite scholarship. You know, Doug Abramite was a Sandpoint local, and he went on to be a huge name in the avalanche world. I mean, not just in North America, but around the world. I mean, he was one of the gurus. I mean, I knew who Doug Abramite was before I moved to Sandpoint. And I mean, he kind of helped form how we do this and write the book on this. I mean, he's an amazing mind when it comes to avalanche work. And so he died about 15 years ago, but IPAC has a scholarship that we, you know, to remember Doug and the work that he did. And every year we donate avalanche courses to youth that, you know, kind of honor him. And so to me, like, that's such a neat thing, because we've been doing it for about a decade now. And I look around at these Abramite scholarship winners, and so many of them have gone on to do things in the avalanche world. It kind of spearheaded either their jobs or their future. And so it's been such a neat way to not only honor Doug, but to kind of help, you know, youth that maybe couldn't go to an avalanche class, get into an avalanche class and give them a future.
Yeah, a little nudge to help them get started and find out if they love that area, and onward they go. I think that's a great program.
Yeah, it was really neat.
Yeah. If folks wanted to learn more about that, is it the same website? Where do they go?
Same website. And if you get on the education tab, which is right there front and center, there's an opportunity to apply for the Abramite scholarship every year.
That's cool. All right. Remind us of the website one more time, then we're going to go to a song break.
It's www.idahopanhandleavalanche.org.
All right. Very good. Well, what a great recap of what y'all are doing, and hopefully saving lives and keeping people safe. It's just great work. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a song break, everyone, and then he's going to put on a different hat, and we are talking avalanche dogs, avy dogs. So, hope you'll all enjoy this song. Well, all right, that was Shotgun Down the Avenue, and I can't believe it, but Jeff didn't know this song by heart.
Not yet.
No, but you do now, though. Anyway, listeners, if you're just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I am Julie Calamine, one of the one of several Tuesday morning show hosts. And this morning I'm joined by Jeff Thompson. His first hat that he wore in the first part of the interview was of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. But now we're moving on to, I think, an even more fun topic. And that is the Schweitzer Avalanche Dog Rescue, Avalanche Rescue Dog Program. We'll get it right, Jeff. All right. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll start with the same darn question, which is, tell us a little bit about the history of these, of the rescue dog program at Schweitzer.
Absolutely. So I got involved kind of the same way that I was involved with snow, where I happened to live next door to some folks that were really into avalanche rescue dogs, and we lived in the mountains, and they kind of plugged me in. I happened to have a Labrador, and this was in the late 90s, and so they said, hey, you should come train your dog. And next thing I knew, I had myself an avalanche rescue dog, and the ski area I was working for at the time didn't have an avalanche rescue dog program, but many of the ski areas did. And so I approached the ski area and said, hey, what do you think about developing this program? And they were into it. So next thing you know, we had avalanche rescue dogs, and I all of a sudden was in charge of avalanche rescue dogs. And so once again, I've been doing it for just about 30 years, and I'm on my fourth dog now. And when I came in 2015 to Sandpoint, my dog Annie, she was a year and a half, and I said to Schweitzer, I'm like, hey, just, you know, I got this dog and she does this thing, and would you be interested? And they said, absolutely. And so over the course of the last decade, we've really developed a program up at Schweitzer where we have five avalanche rescue dogs, and we have everything from 11 months to 10-year-old dogs, and their job is to be ready to be deployed to help find people that are buried in avalanches.
Tell us about that training. Are you the main trainer? Do they have to go somewhere? How do these guys learn?
Yeah, good question. We do most of the training. And so it's been, I think I've been through as much training as the avalanche dogs themselves. It's sort of a train the trainer type of thing. And, you know, I've always said that training the trainer, training the handler is the hardest part of the mission. You know, understanding the dogs and the relationship with the dogs and how to work with them to get them to do what we're looking for, and maintaining that relationship with the dogs is critical. And I've learned a lot, you know, through just doing it, but we also travel to different places, you know, Utah and Colorado and Washington and Canada to work with other dog teams and trainers. And you know, there's so many different techniques and so many different types of dogs, but that's what kind of makes it exciting, is that there's not just one way to do it.
For sure. And, you know, who was it that made that quote, no bad dogs, only bad owners? We won't go down that road right now, but it's been my experience in owning dogs and training dogs that it's so much repetition, and it's not for everybody. Not everyone can quite get to that place where they're able to, you know, maintain what needs to be maintained for dog training.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one thing I've learned through the years is that the avalanche piece of it is almost the easiest part. You know, to teach a Labrador to find things isn't that hard.
Not too hard.
It's everything else. And all of that other stuff is relationship based. It's how you interact with the dog. It's your relationship with that dog that is the basis for the whole program, for the way that that dog has confidence in its job and life. You know, that relationship is how you're going to understand what the dog is trying to tell you. And so that's really the biggest part of it, is developing that relationship and understanding what the dog is trying to tell you.
Right. What is ongoing training like for an avalanche rescue dog? Once they've got it, is that kind of it? Or is it just ongoing all the time?
It's ongoing. You know, up at the ski hill, it's everything from being in the crate and not whining, to riding snowmobiles, to loading helicopters, to getting on ski lifts, to being able to go to ski school classes and get pet by 25 little kids, and skiing underneath our legs, and riding toboggans, and riding on our shoulders, and traveling through snow. I mean, it's just endless, the amount of travel techniques and interaction techniques that the dogs need to have. And so we're constantly exposing them to different things and different, you know, situations that we're in to try to develop those skills. And we start right away. You know, our goal is to get a dog. You know, usually we try to pick up a dog in February when they're 8 weeks old, and it starts right away.
And where do they live? With you all, the trainers? Are they up at the mountain a lot? How does it work?
They mostly live with their primary handler. Each dog has a primary handler that they live with. And then each dog has a secondary handler, too. And so we try to have them spend a lot of time with them as well.
You mentioned to me during the song break that labs have been a really successful breed for you, and that makes a lot of sense. Do you do any kind of personality training or testing when you're assessing whether a puppy is going to work for you?
Absolutely. You know, I just picked up a dog last year about this time, maybe a little later in March, from Gold Creek Kennels out in Selly Valley. And yeah, you know, there's certain things that I look for specifically, but then there's also traits. You know, you want a dog that's not going to be scared of things. So one of the things that I do is I'll take my set of keys or something loud and I'll drop it on the ground right in front of the puppy. If that puppy runs and cowers behind something, well, that might not be the pup for avalanche work. And so there's a series of little tests like that that we can do to clue us in. You know, do they like to find things? Even rolling a tennis ball to an 8-week-old puppy, a lot of them are going to look at it and be like, oh, that looks pretty fun.
Yeah, it's the basic little test, but they're very important because you're going to put a lot of time and energy into that dog along the first year and then continuing on. It's a big commitment for everybody.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's talk about the dogs in the program. Who's running around out there right now?
Well, like I said, we have 5 dogs at Schweitzer. So we got Reba, who's our newest puppy. She's 11 months old, and she's still a little Tasmanian devil, but she's great. She's coming along great. She's actually going to probably take one of her first tests later this week. And then we have Maisie, who's a 2-year-old black lab. She's up on the hill today. And then we have Murphy, who's a yellow lab. Abby, who's a yellow lab. And then Annie is our OG. She's our original dog, and she's our old girl. And she was my dog as well. So Annie is more or less retired, but she still comes around to keep the other dogs in line.
That's right. Right herd on all those young ones.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, be the grandma. That's really cool. I need to back up for just a minute because I've asked you about the training, and that sounds like it's ongoing and pretty intense, but we haven't really walked through or talked about what happens when there is an actual avalanche emergency. What is the dog's job?
Yeah, that's a great, great point. That's sort of the why. And, you know, we talked earlier in the interview about why avalanche beacons are so important. And so if somebody's not wearing an avalanche beacon and they're buried under the snow, really the best tool to find them is the nose of a dog. You know, besides that, you could spend hours and hours of time with probe poles looking for somebody, but really the nose of the dog is going to be the best tool. And the way that works is that person is buried and their scent is going to travel through the snow and it's going to make it to the snow surface. And the dog will come onto the avalanche and it will traverse back and forth until it finds that scent. And then it finds the source of the scent, and then it will alert us and say, hey, this is where that person is. And then we know, we mark that spot and then we dig down and get that person out. And so you think about a ski area, why it's such an important resource. Like, yes, ski patrol, our job is to make it safe and our job is to take care of the avalanche danger. But that's not always the case. Sometimes Mother Nature has a different plan. And in those situations, having the dogs at the top of the mountain, you know, people don't typically wear avalanche rescue gear at the ski areas. And so it's so important to have that resource because when you need it, you really need it.
Yeah. Are they there every day that Schweitzer's open?
Yeah, we always have at least one, but usually 2 certified dogs at the top of the mountain.
That's incredible. Okay, let's talk about how you manage that and pay for all of that, because we've got handlers, we've got dogs, we've got a lot of equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is sort of an extra program besides just the ski patrol program itself. And so we've actually created a nonprofit for the ski patrol, which is pretty normal these days. A lot of dog programs are funded through a nonprofit. So Friends of Schweitzer Ski Patrol. And the best way to access that is we have a QR code on our Instagram site. And so if you get on Instagram, you'll see that there's a QR code right there and you can donate there. Or if you are a skier and you come up to the Sky House, pop your head into the window that's right there. It's a patrol headquarters, and you can donate there, or you can actually meet the pups because they're always up there.
That's pretty cool. I think that would be a fun way to make a donation.
Yeah, and then keep your ears out because we are going to have a dog benefit. We do every year. Last year was at Powder Hound, and it's such a good time. We bring all the dogs. We have a raffle. We've got pizza deals, and it's usually springtime, so it's really fun. So keep your ears out for that date. We haven't figured it out yet, but
that does sound fun.
It's coming.
In addition to donations, can dog biscuits be brought to the
yeah, absolutely. Labs? Yeah, bring us some dog biscuits and I'd ski around with some bacon in your pocket too. They'll probably find you first in an avalanche.
Boy, labs and food, I can imagine. They're probably pretty hungry all the time with all that work. All right. So let's ask about any interesting stories that happen up on the mountain. I got to think kids and people just love to see the labs up there and want to pet and get to know them and all that.
Yeah, and you're touching on a great part of what we do. I mean, not only are the dogs there for a serious reason, you know, but they also are such a great avenue for education. You know, people see them and say, oh, what are these dogs here for? And it just starts that conversation, you know, it exposes people to the realities that avalanches do exist, and that especially if you leave the ski area and go out of bounds, that this is definitely a concern. And so having the dogs as sort of a cute prop in a way really helps us with that messaging. And it also kind of brings back the reality that, like, whoa, this can happen. You know, so that's sort of a secondary piece of what we do, but really an important piece of what we do. And then when you tie that into social media, that helps a lot too. You know, like this year, Schweitzer Marketing did a video, and I guess with a cute avalanche dog, it's pretty easy. But the fact that we put out a video that millions and millions and millions of people are watching and learning about what we do only helps that messaging even more.
Absolutely, and in a fun way that people are going to enjoy. Now, earlier we talked about the fact that you partner with you partner with another organization too.
Correct.
Yeah, yep. Let's talk about that.
So that organization is called NRAC, Northern Rockies Avalanche Canines. And so this organization is sort of the blanket organization for you know, mostly the inland empire, I guess. It's Western Montana and the Panhandle. And I guess we could extend down into central Idaho as well. But basically Schweitzer and Whitefish and Silver Mountain. And you know, we have a couple other mountains that are looking to become involved. But we've all combined our resources and we've started working together. And so we've taken the training and we've made it so that we all have the same testing standards. And we've supported each other with helping put these tests on. And once a year, we all get together for 3 days and work together. And it's so much fun. We get 9 or 10 dogs together and handlers, and we exchange ideas and search techniques and training opportunities. And we're really trying to standardize what we do. And so that if you have a dog that shows up, like a search and rescue group or a sheriff office orders an avalanche rescue dog, that they can expect a certain standard from our dogs, whether it's from Schweitzer or Silver or Whitefish, that these dogs have all been trained to the same level. And it's pretty common around the West, you know, Utah and Washington and California, they all have similar type organizations. But for us up here, this is a new thing, and it's been exciting to be a part of it.
I bet that it is exciting. And yes, nice to have standards so you have some expectation of what a dog can do and maybe even commands, something as simple as having standardized commands, because that could be confusing, I would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and that's one thing we work at with Schweitzer is that we can kind of take each other's dogs. You know, we know how each other's dogs work. You know, it's not like an avalanche beacon where it's going to work the same for every single person. You know, dogs are very, very different from each other. And so to be able to work each other's dogs and kind of have it as standard as possible is a great thing.
You must have to practice with these dogs. And does that involve burying people in snow? What is that like?
Oh, Julie, what a great lead in. This is going to be what I talked about if you asked me at the end. But yes, in fact, probably in 2 hours, I'm going to be doing just that. You know, I've got both my dogs in the truck right now, and we're going to be heading up to the mountain. But my youngest dog, Reba, we're in need of people to bury. I've bugged ski patrollers so much that I think they look at me and they avoid me now because they don't want to get buried anymore. So if you are somebody that is interested in helping us out and you're not afraid of hanging out in a snow cave for a little bit, we would love to use you.
Oh, that actually sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, it can be really peaceful. You know, it's quiet. It's, you know, it's not being buried like you would imagine. We don't put somebody in a hole and then just shovel a bunch of snow on them. You know, it's generally a snow cave that you can sit up in and you can hang out in. And then we close the entrance so that the dog has to find where that entrance is and then come in. And so we're always looking for volunteers to help.
All right. All right, listeners. So if you are looking for a new volunteer opportunity, and I know there are plenty of volunteer opportunities around Sandpoint, this may be one that you have not tried yet. So once again, they would go to what? Ski Patrol? Or how would they find that?
Well, I'd say either stop in at the Sky House if you're a skier, and we have a desk right there, or you could call Schweitzer directly. I don't have the number in front of me, but you could call Schweitzer, just call the front desk and have them route you to Ski Patrol, or tell them like, hey, I want to get buried in a dog hole, and they'll know what you mean and they'll route you to the right spot. But yeah, I need people, so it'd be great to get some different people for the dogs to look for.
It sounds pretty fun. You know, I don't have an after all these many years doing the morning show, there aren't that many new volunteer opportunities that we talk about, so this is kind of exciting. Listeners, grab it before it gets so full that there won't be any more room in the snow cave.
And how much fun to have a little 11-month-old Labrador come poke their nose in and come greet you in the cave.
Totally. Do they get a big reward when they find the person? What happens?
They do. You know, we have instructions for the person that's buried on how to reward them, but they have their avalanche toy that they love. And really, that's what they're looking for. They are looking for the person, but they want that toy.
Yeah, I get it. Dogs love toys. Well, Jeff, what have we not covered about the avalanche rescue dogs? This has been a really interesting conversation.
You know, that's a great question. I mean, it sounds like we've covered it all. You know, I'm really grateful that we have this program now. It's, you know, I think what spearheaded this was a couple of years ago, there was an inbounds avalanche at Silver, and that really highlighted the need for these dogs. And it's been amazing what Silver has done with their program since that avalanche. You know, they've got 3 certified dogs now, and they're such a big part of this program. And even though that was such an unfortunate event, like the silver lining from that was like what we've done with avalanche rescue and avalanche awareness, and you know, the way the program has grown. And you know, so that was, I mean, like I said, such an unfortunate thing, but I mean, it really showed the need for that program. And it's been great to see all the growth and support that's happened because of that.
There you go. A good way to look at a very terrible tragedy, but it's allowed you all to grow and be more prepared.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I guess on this note then, I'm going to wrap it up and thank you, Jeff Thompson, of many, many hats, but the most current one of the Schweitzer Avalanche Dog Rescue Program. I just thought it was a very informative interview, and I appreciate you coming in. And it sounds like you got a busy day, so off you go.
Yeah, thanks. Well, good to see you again, Julie.
You too, Jeff. Well, I've got a nice song to end this interview. I think you'll all enjoy it. It's a cover of a Cat Stevens dog.